We'll go into the Board of Supervisors meeting for Wednesday, June 10th, 2026 at 8:50 on the clock. We'll begin with the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
The Open Meetings Act is on the wall to my left. Attendance by observation: Adams, Claybaugh, Haxby, Tiemann, Lytle, Dorn, and Juergens. It was Mr. Lytle's birthday on the 9th. Happy birthday. Another wonderful year.
Thanks.
I knew you'd appreciate that.
Yeah.
Up first is the consent agenda. Approve the general agenda. Approve minutes of the meeting held May 27, 2036. Approve all claims through June 10th, 2026, in the amount of $1,391,582.27. Approve and place on file correspondence received. Approve correcting number on LPA program agreement from DPS-3437 to DPS-32207. Hickory Road. Delete item 6. Move on to item 7, approve district court summary fee report and register of deeds fee report for the month of May 2026, and receive and place on file the 25 annual Odell Volunteer Fire Department fire and rescue report. I'd ask for a motion to approve the consent agenda as presented, less item 6.
Explain number 5. Number 5, last meeting. Typically, when I get two of those documents, they're the same. I glanced at them and thought they were the same. So there was two separate ones. So we will be voting on the other one that we didn't last
time. Move to approve. Motion by Lytle, second by Dorn. Any discussion on the consent agenda? Please vote. 7 in favor. Motion carries. Regular agenda, comments from the public, and requests for future agenda items for Board of Supervisors meeting. There is a sign-up sheet for the 9:15 public hearing for support or opposition for the wellhead protection area over on the table to my right. Welcome Mr. Rue from the Beatrice City Council, Mr. Cannon from NACO. Good morning. We will go on to committee reports. Building and Grounds, Winter Lights, Mr. Dorn.
Dave's here.
Good morning, Mr. Jones.
Good morning.
I'll just give an update on the northeast corner of the courthouse where we had talked about moving the generator. I did get approval from the city for the setback to place a generator 15 feet east of the transformer. So we will start with installing some conduit to the new location, and I did talk to Greg Dennis from Masonry Construction. He was down here. He's going to be doing some work on a church down here, so he stopped by here. And during renovation, we used to have curbing all the way around the base of the courthouse foundation. They removed that curbing and installed limestone window sills at that time, and they could not get to this northeast corner because of the existing concrete that was there. So we still have those three seals, so I asked them to give me a proposal to put those in also. And so that corner would also include just removing some of that concrete and, for future green space there. So that's about all I have.
Thank you, Mr. Jones.
Thank you.
Equalization, we just had a meeting on that. We'll have a closed session at the end of the meeting. Protests need to be in by June 30th. July 15th, forms need to be in if you have damage to a building. And Patty reminded us that equalization is your taxation and assessment is based on January 1st conditions. Please call the assessor's office now prior to protests, if at all possible, to take care of those ahead of time before the protest period actually begins. Finance and insurance, Mr. Juergens.
Large ticket item, election workers, payroll, $12,324.38. Advanced correctional health care, jail, on-site medical, $11,593.90. Applied Connective Tech, IT Services, $14,585.05. City of Wymore, quarterly EMS services, $10,000. Gage County, janitorial supplies, services, office space, $23,176. Garrison Law Office, $10,264. MIPS, computer support programs, etc., $13,462.38. NERMA, county liability insurance, $392,306. Beatrice Concrete Sand and Gravel. Sand and Gravel, $66,949.54. Out of the Inheritance Fund, MIPS Incorporated. Capital Outlay, Commercial and Residential, $145,596.50.
Thank you, Mr. Jergens. Human Resources, Employee Relations. Do you want to touch on this with FOP agreements and agreements reached and signed? And
for finance?
For human resources, employee relations.
We can.
Or we could wait for law enforcement as well.
We can.
We'll skip human resource since there isn't anything terrible there. Law enforcement, emergency management, Mr. Lytle.
Gus, you got anything today? Lisa, you got anything? Hurry, because Tiemann wants to talk about FOP contract.
Okay. All right. Good morning, everybody. Just to kind of brief you a little bit, as you know, we did, Gage County participated in a disaster declaration for the state of Nebraska to coordinate with the other five counties. NEMA and FEMA will be on site. We'll be traveling to Adams tomorrow morning to look at their damages and then come back here to Beatrice, going to look at the roads, you know, those areas where aggregate was lost and washing was done, and then we'll head down to Wymore. We'll also be visiting the city of Beatrice. Their water department had some issues too. So the biggest picture of the, I guess, component of this is Norris Public Power with their loss of infrastructure. And so that was the majority of the damages, and we were able to make that threshold over 102,000. So just preliminary damages were right at 140. Those are very preliminary, so they could be less, they could be more. So just so you know that. Again, heavy rains continue. It's a welcome sight to get some ponds full, but they are starting to cause some concerns. We, over the weekend, obviously watched some stream gauges with concerns Saturday morning and Sunday morning of possible impacts coming to Beatrice. We were good there. Turkey Creek stream gauge the stream gauge on South 6th Street is now real time, so those are fairly accurate for us. Turkey Creek, a lot of wash down, you know, from the areas. So basically, National Weather Service gives us a call and asks us to look at surface water, you know, going as far up as 30 miles just to see how much is going to be draining so that they can do their predictions and timelines as to when the impacts will be felt. Today, we have NERMA here on site at 4 o'clock. They're going to be doing some insurance, some training for employees. So I know we got that word out. We appreciate press helping us with that word out that our employees will be participating in some training on de-escalation being presented by Todd Duncan. On zoning, this morning, obviously, you have the Wellhead Protection Area hearing. The other thing is that I wanted to point out is next Tuesday, we've got a full night for our commission. We have three hearings, of which we start at 6 o'clock. First hearing will be on Isley Estates, a subdivision, an 18-lot subdivision that's being proposed and been drawn out up in the northeastern part of Gage County. Then we will have the hearing on the consideration to hear comments in support or opposition for consideration of a moratorium. And then last is our livestock regulations. So that's really all I have this morning.
do we have any ponds that are getting up to the spillways? That you've seen?
Yes, absolutely. Okay. Lower Big Blue was out all weekend. Scott Skabaka will be here, I believe, this morning during the hearing presentation for Wellhead Protection Area for Beatrice. But when that swamp hit 7 inches, and obviously Pickerel and Philly area and so forth, structures, some of them were rehabbed, you know, in the last 2 years when it was dry. But so I'll let him, maybe that's will be a question that he can give a better report for too at some time. But yes, so thank you.
Good to have the ponds full.
Yep.
Just got a call, project over in Pawnee just got canceled because of too much rain. We probably don't need to touch on FOP, or is there anything you want to touch on that?
I mean, we can have a celebratory conversation if you'd like.
Good through 2027.
Yeah, it's a 4-year contract, which, you know, I mean, you know, we're a year and a half into it already, so we'll be negotiating again here in another year. So, but no, it's a good contract. I think there were some wins and losses on both sides. Everybody's not exactly 100% happy, so I think it probably came out to be a good deal.
Road and Bridge, Mr. Churgens.
The road crew's been working, asphalt crew's milling, filling, spraying weeds. We talked about the parade and having a presence for the county with the road grader. Going to wash up one of the pretty ones, make it look nice. Rex and I had a question. We talked about road grader training. Has that gotten scheduled or been accomplished yet?
It has not.
What are we looking at for timeline?
Probably towards the end or beginning of next season, just because the time frame with summer here, it's just be difficult to pull guys for a week out. So I would probably just try to suggest it for beginning of spring, so we can get somebody in there.
We just missed spring.
It would not be the worst time when summer would be the best time when it's hot and the roads aren't.
No, I can't. I don't have enough guys just to pull a dozen guys off to do whatever.
I think because we also talked, you wanted to do our guys first, and then we were going to host it for the townships. So
correct.
I think to put that off for another year would be not a good plan.
I will see what his schedule is like, but we'll see. He fills up fast.
I think I'd like an executive session on personnel on the road department.
Right now?
Yeah.
Or at the end?
Or do you want at the end?
I can do it now. It won't take long.
I just wonder with shuffling everyone in and out if that would work. You want Mark to stay?
Yeah.
Mark, would you stick around for a closed session at the end of the meeting? And I'm going to assume that closed would be in because of personnel?
Yeah, there's this question that someone asked on something that has come up. So.
All right. Anything else for Road and Bridge?
Yeah. What are the time of year for weeds, Mark? Would you for the sake of the public and for the years that are here that relay information to the public, would you kind of detail what that process is and what happens when you get a letter saying you have weeds that you need to deal with?
So the road department did send out a mass tree letter with the noxious weed letter on the backside to about every landowner that we could possibly find in Gage County. On top of that, the weed superintendent does go out and based off phone calls that have come in and or observations from our crews or other people, go out and verify, then sends out a noxious weed letter to them, pretty much. So with all the moisture that we have gotten here over the last couple months, I have even noticed the thistles are really bad. And every time I go out, I come back and I talk to Becky and say, hey, did you see this road? Yep, we already got it. But yes. So. I agree with that. I mean, I was in Omaha this weekend and at a park, and there was thistles at the park.
So,
yeah.
I think we talked about this a little bit on Monday, but I think those tree letters went over very well. Once I had a couple calls just wanting clarification to make sure that it wasn't theirs because they had taken care of their trees. Mm-hmm. Once they realized that it was a letter that was sent out to everyone, they were actually pretty appreciative that we're looking into and taking care of it. Also, real quick before I forget, just for the public's aware, we are working on the BIP application through the Infrastructure Hub. There were going to be 9 counties going in on that application. Now there's 8. But we have 3 bridges in that application with the state.
And you said you got out over 100 tree letters.
We had well over 100 tree notices that we sent out to individual landowners with issues of the right-of-way and brush in the right-of-way.
Have you done more of those since then?
We are backtracking and making sure they're following through with the compliance letters and everything. So out of the 100 or so, we had about 75% that have sent back compliance letter and or called. So the 25% that's left, we are sending out the second notice.
Rod could go out and keep getting more while the office staff work on doing the follow-up.
That's what we got.
Okay.
I just didn't want to get too far ahead where I'm trying to do it in sections.
And you're hitting the northern part of the county. You thought you'd be done with the northern part by the end of the year?
Easily, yeah. I'd say in the next month or so. Once I get this second batch of letters sent out due of the second notice, we will come back to and start working further south. So we should have the northern half here done in the next couple months.
All roads?
Not all the roads, just the county-maintained roads at the point.
We also discussed having all the roads because those
we
right-of-ways are...
do all the township roads once the county roads are done.
When you're skipping around on county roads.
I want to cover more of a mass area than stuck in one or two townships. That way, word of mouth would be out there a little bit better.
Mark, on the roadside letters that you sent out, did you send that out to everybody then? To everybody? Okay. So, if you got a letter that was, is that just for them to be mindful of?
Yes.
Or they don't have any, doesn't mean that they have any...
doesn't mean they have any issues, or it was like just that. A reminder. When they do call in, I give them a heads up that it used to come in their tax statements, that kind of roughly that same type of letter. The responsibilities of a landowner, mowing the ditches twice a year, the tree and brush removal in the right-of-way.
All right, we'll have you stick around at the end until the end of the meeting. We have a time event at 9:15. There's a sign-up sheet on the table to my right for support or opposition for the removal of the wellhead protection area. Feel free to sign up if you would like to speak in favor or opposition. We have 7 minutes before that timed event. I don't think either of our presenters can get done in 7 minutes, so I'm going to skip ahead. Approve or disapprove the resolution? 26-08 for Project Program Agreement BL2624. The other piece of the grant paperwork, and this would be Hickory Road.
Yes. No, this
one's
the Adam bypass.
This one's the Adam bypass. Okay. 26-08. Move to approve.
Second.
Motion by Lytle, second by Hammersby to approve Resolution 26-08 and sign Project Program Agreement for BL-2624. This would take traffic constructed off of the bridge going into Adams on the blacktop, which no trucks ever drive on because it is a weight-rated bridge, and it would pave the road along the west side, taking it out to Highway 41. No discussion. Please vote. 7 in favor. Motion carries. Approve or disapprove LPA program agreement federal aid funds project number DPS-3437 Adams Bypass.
Motion to approve.
Second.
By Dorn, second by Haxby.
Freaking left side.
Any discussion on this item? If not, please vote. 7 in favor, motion carries. We have 5 minutes. I guess we can start. Approve or disapprove of this agreement with Merchant McIntyre.
Move to approve.
Second.
Motion by Lytle, second by Juergens. This was our only RFP we received for a grant writer. It is the grant writer that the City of Beatrice currently uses. They've had good luck with them. They called in. We visited on a Zoom some. And I guess I'll open that to the board for a discussion on Merchant McIntyre. If there is any.
I'm just very excited to get it started. See what happens.
I think we definitely need a dedicated grant writer. I can't write all of them. There's more that we could pursue. The only thing that, one, I wish we had would have had more responses, as you have said previously.
I've said a lot of times, yes.
But second is, with them, through the Infrastructure Hub, I have worked with 2 different grant writers now with writing the with the BIP and with the RAISE or the BUILD grant. And both of those, the grant writers were doing the BCAs, the benefit cost analysis. This company does not do that. So that is the one, I think, drawback with this. Those are not easy to do. But there are, I will preface that with, there are a lot of grants that we can apply for that do not require a BCA. So I still think that they would provide a lot of benefit.
And Emily and I had talked about some different options, and I think they'll be equitable for everybody.
Any other discussion on Richard McIntyre?
Let's get him going.
Get him started. I agree.
We can always... in a year, this is a 1-year contract. We can always open it back up just to look to see if we can find a company maybe in the future that does BCAs as well.
And Mr. Claybaugh did talk to them. They had come in at a higher price. They did lower their price by 25%. Was it Mr. Adams? You're looking over him. I thought it was Mr.
Claybaugh. No, I was just actually looking at Mr. Templemeyer.
25%.
Yeah.
I will say thank you, Mr. Claybaugh. Nice work.
This one would be equal.
Motion by Lytle, second by Juergens. Seeing no further discussion, please vote. 7 in favor, motion carries. That would be nice to get a grant writer to vote. We do have 2 closed sessions after a timed event. It is 9:13 on the clock. Our timed event's at 9:15. Lisa, would you come up and give us your recommendation from PNC just prior to the public hearing?
Absolutely. You guys have a copy of that that I handed you at the committee meeting. As far as the recommendation itself, basically, as you review the map, about a year and a half ago, the City of Beatrice came to us and wanted to expand the wellhead protection area on the west side with some, on the east side with some new land purchase as they move forward in planning and just to have land secured should the need arise. This time, the City of Beatrice came to Planning and Zoning and asked to revise and modify the wellhead protection area, which now includes approximately 8,200 or almost 8,300 acres. So it's basically removing everything on the west side of the Blue River. So going back through some of my notes, and I'm sure Tobias and Taylor can answer those questions too, but I believe those wells date back to 1931 when they were first drilled. There's 8 wells, And out of those wells now only are not testing high for nitrates, and therefore the reason that it's not being used for public consumption. So that was the asking. So I guess when it comes to planning and zoning, what the commission reviewed was whenever there's a wellhead protection area within that jurisdiction, which is determined by the time of travel, how water travels, 20 years, we go by a 20-year time of travel. So in essence, if any contaminants would have happened, how many years does it get to, or how many years does it take to get to that point of source? You have that long, dependent upon soil types and, you know, the studies that are done, which Olson's did do the study for the city of Beatrice. So I'll let them share with you that process. But again, removing all the wells on the west side of the Blue River, that frees up that overlay of the jurisdiction, whereas planning and zoning can do, does not have to go through that particular process of first going through review for with that jurisdiction, which in this case is the city of Beatrice. So drain tile, irrigation wells, industrial and commercial uses are some of those. Storage tanks, fuel tanks, just the handling of waste and limitations. So again, if an application came into my office, if it was in that particular area, I would have to defer that application first to the city of Beatrice. This removes it. The state of Nebraska will also tell you, and we will tell you as well, this is the first time that there's ever been acres taken out of a wellhead protection area. So I'll let them share that information with you as well. But again, 1931 was when those wells were drilled, and then they can take it from there. So the recommendation from PNZ is based on the fact that it does not change the character of the district and is in accordance with the comprehensive plan. They approved unanimously. We had one absent that night for a kind of death.
With that, I'll ask for a motion to go into public hearing for support or opposition to the Wellhead Protection Act at 9, Wellhead Protection Area at 9:17.
So moved.
Second.
Moved by Lytle, second by Dorn. Please vote. 7 in favor. We're in public hearing. We've received the unanimous support to remove this from the PNZ. Anything from the board before we let people speak from the public? There's a sign-up sheet on the table to my right here. I only have one name, and they didn't check if they want to speak or not. Mr. Hoover? Mr. Hoover? Did you?
I'm Howell.
Oh.
Keith Howell?
Howell, I'm sorry. Would you like to speak, sir?
I have some questions, actually, and they might get answered while we're here.
If you'd come up and give your name and address for the record, I'll swear you in.
Don't you typically have the applicant present first?
We only have one name here. Okay. We could. You may get your questions answered here. We'll go ahead and swear you in. Give me your name and address for the record.
Keith Howell. My address is 18580 Southwest 89th Road.
Please raise your right hand. Do you swear or affirm to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God?
I do.
18580 Southwest 89th Road. City?
What's the city?
No, I'm Gage County. I'm on the big...
What's your address for the city? Which city address do you have?
Adams?
DeWitt.
DeWitt, okay.
Yeah.
Go ahead, sir.
All right, so the paperwork you guys sent me didn't show me much, but my property is right across from most of these wellheads on the Big Blue River. I don't know where my property line is or where theirs encroaches or crosses over or whatever. I guess what on this... Is it the north side of the river, the Big Blue?
Answer. Some of that's being removed on the north side.
Okay, and I'm just trying to find out what the impact is going to be on my property.
I'm sorry.
You guys were talking about the west
south,
side.
The southwest corner, the wellhead protection area that's in place is on the northeast side of the wellhead protection area that's staying. The south west side is going away.
Okay. So mine would cover the northwest. I don't know. See, we don't have property lines, so that's why it's kind of blurred out in the picture.
The west as a whole, most of the west is going. We can get you maps for that, though.
Yeah, I'm just saying, because the river's not on here. It's kind of blurred out. It just shows where the wellheads and stuff are. I just want to know what the impact is going to be on my property and my portion of the river that I own. I know that there's reinforcement on the river on that side that I don't know if that's supposed to be there or not. I've also had people dumping trash from your wellhead site into the river and debris. We got a concern with that stuff, people accessing the properties over there. So just if I could get some clarification on what this does to my property, that's what I'm looking for.
There should be a very minimal effect whatsoever, other than you won't have restrictions on it. But once they have a chance to present and go through things, it might make things clear. No additional wells, no changes like that. This is basically just removing restrictions for usage on the land. Okay. So if anything, you gain rights to your property, again, that may, if you're in that area, may have been restricted previously.
Okay. All right, well, see what they answer and go from there, I guess.
All right.
Anything else from me, sir? All right, thank you for your time.
I suppose the city has passed this already. Taylor, do you want to present this from the city side, or Mr. Templemeyer? You'll give your name and address?
Sure. Tobias Templemeyer. I'm the city administrator and general manager for City of Beatrice, 400 Ella Street here in Beatrice, Nebraska.
Do you raise your right hand? Do you swear or affirm to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God?
I do.
Please begin.
All right. Well, thank you, everyone. Good morning. Glad to be here. As you guys are well aware, the county's been working on kind of improving or making out an industrial area out by the Coke and Agrium area that's north west of Beatrice. That area is covered by a wellhead protection area, and that wellhead protection area is impeding the development out there for industrial purposes. And so we're here today to talk about removing the wellhead protection area in that location. So one thing I want to kind of talk about first is the city has two well fields. We have what's referred to as the city well field, which are eight wells that are along the railroad right-of-way just north of Coke, right? Those wells have been used to supply Coke and Agrium with water for decades. We also have what's called the city farm. The city farm is about 2 miles north of Coke, and that's where we have four wells, and that's where all the drinking water for the city of Beatrice comes from and has for quite some time. It was talked about earlier how we came in. We asked to expand the wellhead protection area. That's where the city bought some additional ground north of Coke, and we expanded that a couple of years ago. We've now come back, and we're looking at releasing the wellhead protection area that's about everything west of the Big Blue River. West, south, depends on which direction you're looking at, but on that side of the Big Blue River. So as part of this, we wanted to reach out to Olson's. We hired them to make sure that the water quality at the city farm would not be impacted by releasing the wellhead protection area. I understand you've got a copy of their memo, and you can see in there they see no negative impact on the water quality at the city farm. Again, that's where we get all of our drinking water. And so what we're proposing today is to release, by my calculations, about 8,500 acres. I don't know if they, but that's what I came up with, that lies largely south and west of the Big Blue River. The wells remain, the operations remain, everything else stays the same. We just released this area on top of your map. So those who have land in that area now have less restrictions and are able to do more things with their property that's been indicated already.
No additional restrictions. This is only lifting restrictions that are on property owners right now.
Correct.
This does not change your agreements to where you can all of a sudden pump a lot more water.
Correct. Those are all different permits. That those are not changed or impacted, no.
City well fields, in response to the gentleman that spoke before, your areas are actually locked and gated where people aren't coming into those areas. If there are people dumping on the river, that's probably off private property that's not in city control, and the wellhead protection area doesn't affect that.
Yes, correct.
Wells will continue to exist in that area for industrial use, not for potable water for people.
Correct.
And there's room for expansion in your additional wellhead protection area should you need more drinking water that direction.
Correct. That's where we came in a couple of years ago and expanded then to the north and to the east if that's needed in the future.
So it makes sense to say this wellhead protection area has just shifted since those used to be the city wells. These are just moving over into a different area, not using this for drinking water anymore, just shifting this to the northeast, getting rid of the southwest restriction.
Correct.
Questions from the board? I will say this is also something we had talked about from an economic development standpoint. We had asked the city to help us with this as there are people looking to potentially develop now or in the future. This does lift some restrictions in an industrialized area of the county, namely Hoyg, that we hope grows at some point in time. It may or may not, but we're always trying to make things easier for people to do business here. Any questions for Mr. Templemeyer?
It's not a question, just more of a comment. I don't mind taking off the wellhead protection area. I had more of a problem putting it, the other one on with the numbers and how much water is being used. But when we talk about like how they came up with this and the water movement, how do they know which way the water moves 200 feet below the surface? I mean, they thought we were going to, our water table dropped like 10 feet and then all of a sudden it came back up 6 or something like that. But then they can't rationalize how that works, but we can tell which way the water goes 200 feet below the ground.
I'm not an engineer, so I will defer answering that question.
Yeah, no, just, I don't have a problem with this, but that just makes me question.
Understand.
Kind of like global warming. Thank you, Mr. Templemeyer.
Thank you, John.
We do have another gentleman that would like to speak, Connor Paul. Would you give your name and address for the record, please, and then I'll swear you in?
Yep, Connor Paul, 1616 Northridge Road here in Beatrice.
Please raise your right hand. Do you swear or affirm to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth to help you, God?
I do.
Begin, sir.
Just a few questions. I think some of them have kind of been answered already. What does this mean for existing industry that is currently under that wellhead protection program? I did hear that it doesn't change permits, so the water usage will stay generally the same, just lifting said restrictions. Another question. From the previous hearing that I was at to this hearing, it was to potentially further develop industry in the future. Is there any chance the wellhead protection gets placed back on these wells post industry being built?
That's a hypothetical. It'd be hard to answer. I would say it'd be unlikely.
Okay.
I would go as far as to say extremely unlikely.
Okay.
There's always a possibility, but I doubt it.
Could permits potentially be altered given more industry pulling water from these wells, static levels of the wells start to trend down?
The permitting, the wellhead protection area doesn't affect the permitting as far as what the wells are allowed to produce. So that would be an NRD item. There are restrictions on what can be pumped out of these wells already, and that will not change with this or without additional permit changing.
Okay. So the NRD would, I guess, essentially make that decision on...
I believe that's an NRD issue. They do not ask us on water usage or how much water they can pull.
Okay.
But I don't see any changes being made. Currently, with this, there are no changes being made.
Okay. Really, the last question I have, what section out there by Coke Agrium, where is this proposed potential industry going to be built? What general area?
Well, the entire area, Engage has looked at the entire area west of west of 89th Road,
okay,
northwest of 89th and Hickory, kind of still in that core area. But there was a development study done last year, the year before, and I can't remember how many areas there were. This is one of them. Another one's Hickory and 77, other ones up in the northern tier of the county. This is just one of the areas that was looked at for potential industrial use.
Okay. I think that's all my questions.
Appreciate it, sir. Thank you for coming in.
Yes, appreciate it.
Would anyone else like to speak in public hearing? Anybody from the board? Public hearing? Last chance. Scott's just sitting guard here.
Move to close.
At 9:30.
Second.
Motion by Lytle, second by Dorn, come out of closed session at 9:30 on the clock. Please vote. 7 in favor. We won't take a... I'm sorry, come out of public hearing at 9:30. We won't take action on this today. We'll have it on the agenda in 2 weeks. I don't see really any controversy on this one, but it has just been our practice to wait 2 weeks. We do thank the City of Beatrice for coming in and presenting this, as well as going through the motions of finding out how this can be done since it hasn't been done in the past. As Mr. Templemeyer and I have talked about in the past, I like to have as little government restriction on anything as possible. So seeing regulations go away is always a positive. So thank you very much, gentlemen. With that, we'll get back to the regular agenda, and I would invite Mr. Cannon to come up and give his executive director's report for NACO.
Good morning.
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 Yep. What do you want? Is this the do I sit in the seat or
you know,
stand up? Or
it's really up to you.
Okay.
Whatever is most comfortable.
Yeah, I've been in a lot of hot seats before. I think I'll just stand. Good morning, everybody. Thanks for letting me be on the agenda. I appreciate it. My name is John Cannon. For purposes of the record, I'm the executive director of the Nebraska Association of County Officials, which is your association. We're a statewide organization that's owned by all 93 counties, you guys included. If you want to be granular, I can show Eddie the carpet square in the office that belongs to him. Eric can show you the brick on the side of the wall that belongs to you and all that good stuff. But suffice to say, that's why we're here. As a membership organization, it's fun to invite you guys to Kearney or York or wherever we have a workshop or a seminar or a conference. And talk about all the things that are going on statewide with county government. But I think it's more important for us to go to where you are and say, here's what's going on, here are the resources that we have. And so a lot of you guys have seen me testifying in front of the legislature, and so a lot of people consider me a lobbyist. I do not. I think I'm not going to say it's a dirty word because I have a lot of friends that are lobbyists. But I really kind of prefer to think of NACO as being the intergovernmental partner for the state and the feds, and we're that level of government. And so as part of that, what NACO's mission is not merely to lobby and advocate, although we do a lot of that. Really, it's to provide resources to county officials. There are three distinct areas that I think we have as far as the resources that we provide. First and foremost is education. So we have a lot of things like the county board workshop. That first sheet kind of talks about a lot of the educational stuff that we do throughout the year. We have our county board workshop, which was just last week. As part of it, we had a land use forum with LB 663 having passed, and I'll get to that in a moment. There's a lot of questions about how we do planning and zoning in the state of Nebraska, and so that land use planning forum was a part of the county board workshop this year. Frequently, we'll have county board of equalization workshops. We'll have budget workshops that are part of county board workshop as well. We are also very involved in the county clerk's workshop, which is, Don, is that next week, I think? Next week? Yeah, that's right. The treasurers are this week. We're involved in that as well. We'll be involved with the assessor's workshop in August. These are, again, the sorts of things that we do. But there are a couple things on our schedule that I do want to highlight, and that's coming up. And that is our legislative conference, which is going to be October 16th in Burwell. I don't know how many of you have been to the Big Little Rodeo up in Burwell. A few years ago, it got the grandstands got wiped out by a derecho, and they got a grant. And they've rebuilt their grandstand. It's a palace. The place is beautiful. And I'm really looking forward to our legislative conference, which is going to be held up there. Traditionally, legislative conference is wherever our past president is from. And so in 4 years, Emily, you've got to figure out what we're going to be doing down here for our legislative conference. And so that legislative conference is the opportunity for county officials across the state to come to the NACO board and say, here are the things that we think NACO should prioritize as far as legislation is concerned for the upcoming session. I can tell you that the assessors, the clerks, the treasurers, weed superintendents, the sheriffs, they're all incredibly well-organized. They will have a laundry list of things they want the board to consider. They'll have it darn near in bill draft form because they've been working with Beth Farrell in our office. And I want to make you guys aware of that from a board's perspective because you guys have also have a very unique perspective on how county government operates and how it should operate. There are a lot of times that county board members will come before the board and they'll say, I've got an idea as to how we can make this thing move a little bit more efficiently for our citizens. And there have been a few of them that have been taken up by the NACO board and have actually been passed into law. And so I want to give you guys kind of the heads up and the opportunity that if you have an idea that you'd like to present to the NACO board, to please do so. Contact me or Beth Farrell, probably is the best one, or Candace or Elaine, because we'll get that thing drafted into a form that the board can consider and take action on. Because I remember a few years ago, Holt County Supervisor Bill Tilkey said, John, I want you to put me on the agenda. I want to talk about township roads. And I said, okay, cool. So I put him on the agenda. And we got to the legislative conference, and all right, Bill, what do you have? And he says, just want to talk about them. What do you guys think? And I thought, this is not something that the board can take action on. And so I want to try and get it a little bit more formalized and, again, give you guys the opportunity to do that. So that legislative conference, again, a really big deal. It kind of sets the table for a lot of the stuff that we'll do in the upcoming session. And then, of course, in December 16 and 18 through 18, we'll have our annual conference in Kearney at U.S. Center North. We've got a ton of educational presentations that are going to be occurring there. We're going to have a number of speakers that are coming from across the country and across the state to talk about all the things that affect county government. So the agenda hasn't been finalized, but if you give me a call at the office, I can kind of take you through the sorts of things that we're planning on. We had a webinar actually a few weeks ago, and I apologize. My notes are a little out of date. I was on county budget prep. As you guys know, we're getting into evaluation process season. I'm sure you guys are really looking forward to that. But as part of that and part of this whole process that we have, you guys have to construct a budget for the county. And so the last several years, the legislature has focused really closely on county budgets and our property tax requests and that whole process of raising the necessary revenue to fund government. And because of that, there have been a number of changes that they've made to the laws that govern all of us. And so we want to make sure those resources are available to you. That webinar was recorded. It's available if you'd like to go back and review it. We have a number of resources on our website regarding how to do county budgets. We have a budgeting software through MIPS, the software company that we own, which means that you guys own in part, although we invoice you for using them. And there's just a ton of information that we have out there from a budgetary perspective to kind of make the thing go a little bit smoother for you, kind of what if a bunch of things and figure out if we take money from the inheritance tax fund and we put it in the road fund, what does that do to the levy and all that good stuff. As far as other resources we have our 93 newsletter that comes out every Friday. I think all of you are signed up for that. If you're not, please let me know and we'll make sure that you're on the list. We also have our legislative newsletter that Beth Farrell publishes every Friday during the legislative session. Also, this last session, we started doing what we call our Friday Action Call, where over the lunch hour, I'll kind of go through, here's kind of the inside baseball of what's going on in the legislature. And if you're familiar with the term FAC, we don't drink during it, as far as you know. We don't, really, we don't. But it is a little bit more loose and kind of a more unvarnished take on what's going on in the legislature. And I remember after the first one, I turned to Candace and I'm like, we're not recording this, right? And she's like, no. I said, thank goodness, because we can actually express our honest opinions then. But we do go through what's going on in the legislature, the things to talk about, you know, kind of the inside baseball, who's mad at whom and all that good stuff. And so if you'd like to tune into that, I think it's a rollicking good time. As far as some other resources we have, the second page of that packet that I gave you guys is a one sheet from our County Explorer webpage. So we have all 93 counties are expressed on that County's Explorer webpage. And we've got that one sheet has some basic information, demographics, tax information, population, all that good stuff. There's a QR code on the bottom right-hand corner of that. And if you scan that, it'll take you to the full page for Gage County. We've got more information there that we've pulled from a number of different resources. We pulled from the U.S. Census Bureau, from the University of Nebraska, from Extension Office, from the Department of Revenue. We try to have as much information about Gage County as is humanly possible to have on one web page for you guys. And so I invite you to look at the webpage, at the one sheet that we've got there. If there's anything wrong, please tell me, because I'd really like to make sure it's corrected. Last week we were notified that we had McPherson County, which I don't know if any of you have ever been to Tryon. It's way out west. It's one of the smallest counties in the state, population 364, and the one sheet had a population of 36,000 people. Oops, that was supposed to be Madison County. So I want to make sure that we have our information correct. But also the information that we have on the County Explorer webpage, want to make sure that information is as accurate as possible as well. So please check that out. A great resource for your citizens, a great resource when you're talking to Senator Dorn or whoever's going to replace him in the legislature. So we think these are very, very good things. The third page that we have is a thing about understanding a county's share of property taxes. And you guys, it's an election year. You guys are really probably hearing about property taxes. It's also valuation time and protest time. I'm sure you're hearing about property taxes as well. What this sheet was designed to do is to kind of take people through how we go from a valuation base to its property tax request, how that becomes a property tax levy rate. And people like to use the term levy rate and levy interchangeably. The levy is the amount of money that you're raising. The rate is the rate that you apply to an individual home to raise that money. How we determine what the rate is, to what the average assessed value for single-family residential is in Gage County, to what their actual county tax portion of the property tax bill would be, and really how that compares to a lot of other things. One, I believe in Gage County, it's like 18.7% or something like that of the total county tax bill is going to go to Gage County for the services that you provide. And then the other thing that we put on there is, if you look at that $444, that's the average county portion of the property tax for a single-family residential home. That $444 compared to the, what is it, like $6,844 that people pay on average for Netflix and their cell phone and their gas and their utilities and their homeowner's insurance. When you compare $444 to $6,844, that's a heck of a deal that you're getting for all the things that the county does. As you guys know better than anyone, we do roads and we do bridges, we do law enforcement, we do jails, we do courts, we do elections, and people want more of those things and not less. So when you line that up against their homeowner's insurance, I think paying $450 a year is a heck of a deal. So we produce that for you for every single county across the state. Again, we derive a lot of this information from public information from the Department of Revenue or the U.S. Census Bureau to put all this in front of you guys as boards, but also to put in, so you guys can put it in front of your residents. And so that is for your use. If you want to take it off of our webpage and do a screen grab, if you want to have make copies of that and hand it out to people, please feel free to do so, because, again, you guys own NACO. This is all your stuff that we're trying to produce to help you guys. Also on our website, under our advocacy tab, we have our legislative priority primers. What that will go through is, when I talked about the legislative conference, we'll take those things that are our legislative priorities and we'll break it down to, you know, here's the issue, and here are the stakeholders that are involved, here's what our recommended solutions are. And that primer really kind of gives you an idea as to where NACO is coming from on a lot of the legislation that it pursues. And so if you have an interest in, like, why in the world is NACO doing this, the answer will probably start there. But if you have other questions, you can certainly call me as well. So that's usually for, we started the primers for those things that were NACO legislative priorities. We did add a few on there as they came up. Inheritance tax is one of them. We always hear about that one, where we have to play defense. LB 1219, which would have put a 2% cap on property tax requests from one year to the next. That was kind of a big deal, so we figured we need to put a primer together for that as well. So a lot of information on the advocacy tab that we'd like you guys to take a look at. There's a campaign from the National Association of Counties called We Are Counties, and I can't say that without thinking of the Farmers Mutual team, and I'll just leave it at that. And so our version of that is We Are Nebraska Counties, and what we're looking to do is really tell the story of counties throughout the state of Nebraska. And so we're asking counties to tell their stories. You know, what do you have going on in the community that the county has done that's particularly interesting? What's a unique solution that you came up to? Something that was, like a freeholder petition perhaps? No, we'll leave that one alone. But it's things that are going on in the counties. And oh, by the way, we've got the 250th anniversary of the signing of the Declaration of Independence coming up. If you want to talk about things that are going on in your community from that perspective as well, we would certainly welcome it, because we want to have as much stuff published on our website, published across the state, talking about what the county story really is. And I think there's a, I travel to county boards all the time, and there's a lot of really cool stories that are going on. I was driving through Mullen yesterday, and they had a whole, Mullen, which is Hooker County seat, right? town of about 280 people, I think, and they had a whole bunch of construction going on. I'm like, what in the world is going on? So I called the clerk, and I said, what's going on here? She's like, oh, yeah, they're redoing the motel, and here's a whole bunch of other things that are going on. I'm like, that's awesome. These are the things, these are the stories that need to be told, because you would never otherwise hear about something like that going on in Mullen. So we want to make sure that stuff gets out there for the public as much as we can, for your fellow county board members as well, so they can see what's going on in Gage County, which makes you guys pretty special. So encourage that storytelling if you'd like to. And again, this is under the rubric of the National Association of Counties. By virtue of the fact that you guys are members of our NACO, you are also members of NACO with the little O. And so what we have done is we essentially subsidize about 10% of the national membership through your association with us as NACO. So dues went up by 90% of what the NACO membership would be. So we're picking up 10% of the cost to combine those two. We've been sending out invoices for our membership dues, and there is a line item on there that includes the National Association dues. I really prefer that everyone pays the whole thing, but if you guys are like, yeah, you know what, the National Association membership doesn't mean that much, I'm going to stick Emily on you first, but also, I totally understand that. We want to make sure this is all as transparent as possible. So I mentioned the National Association of Counties. For what it's worth, their annual conference is going to be next month, July 16th through 20th, I believe, in New Orleans, Louisiana. I cannot wait to spend the middle of July in New Orleans. I think it's going to be something. So we'll see how that goes. However, their content is really, really good. And so if you have the opportunity to attend one of their National Association conferences, I cannot recommend it highly enough. Emily, I think this is your first one that you're attending. Is that right? So be prepared. There's a lot of really good information. There are a number of county officials from across the state that are attending that NACO conference. We get a vote for an extra vote for the NACO second VP for every county that attends. And so I'm just trying to make sure people go. I mean, it's good content. It really, really is. I mentioned MIPS earlier, and you guys have a pretty good familiarity with MIPS. That's Multi-County Information and Programming Services. That is a software company that is owned by NACO, and they provide the solution for the assessor, the clerk, the treasurer. They've really been focusing lately on GIS, as having that as a solution available for primarily the assessor's package, but also we're looking on ways to roll that out for the sheriff's office and for EMS and for the highway superintendent and the weed superintendent. There are a number of applications in county government where GIS is really going to be very helpful. So that's one of the things that the guys at MIPS are working on right now. NACO Benefit Services is the health insurance pool that we operate. Counties are free to join as members. By spreading out that risk, it generally keeps rates down. This last year, we were able to have overall for the pool an 8.5% increase in our insurance rates, which is pretty good for most of the pools across the state. So we're pretty happy about that. And then one other thing I want to mention as far as a resource goes, less pressing for you guys being in southeast Nebraska, but we do have our NACO West Training Center that we opened in Ogallala a couple of years ago. And I've talked to folks in the eastern part of the state, and they're like, why in the world would NACO invest money out in Ogallala? And what I will tell you is that if you look at the state of Nebraska as a whole, we all know that the population of Nebraska tilts very heavily toward the east. You know, Omaha, Lincoln, everyone in the southeast corner of the state. But when you look at the population of county officials, and if you draw a line north-south from Cozad, which would roughly separate the landmass of Nebraska, to the eastern half and the western half, 40% of all the county officials in the state live west of Cozad, right? And that's because every county has a board, every county has an assessor, a clerk, a treasurer, a county attorney, weed superintendent, all that good stuff. And so you look at that geographic distribution, it's going to be a lot more even. And so if I want to send someone from MIPS up to Sioux County, which is Harrison, it's as far away from Lincoln as you can get and still be in the state of Nebraska, that's an 8-hour drive out. It's an 8-hour drive home. They spent a couple hours in the courthouse. That's 2.5 days that one person is devoted to one county. And that's not terribly efficient as far as projecting the resources for the county officials we're supposed to serve. And so we built an office building out there. I was just looking to rent space. The NACO board said, let's just go build a building. I thought, okay, we can do that too. And so we got the thing fully teched out. We got meeting room space for a lot of people. If you ever have business out in Ogallala for any reason, that space is available for you. We rent out space to the Attorney General's office, to Zell Human Resources, and to Applied Connective, which is a managed IT company. And so we've got that place full. And if you know Candace Meredith at all, you know that she's going to squeeze every nickel that she can out of that building, and she's been doing a nice job of that as well. Some other direct resources that we provide through our partnerships we have a partnership with DA Davidson. That's a lease purchase program for a lot of the, you know, like road graders and those sorts of large purchases that you might want to make for capital purposes. We have the U.S. Bank Purchase Card Program, where we have a pretty competitive rates that we're able to get for county government. The NACO Public Promise Procurement, it provides a cost-effective and efficient purchasing contract vehicle. That's through the National Association of Counties. CashFest by 3+1 is, they're not an investment tool. Essentially what they do is they kind of give counties an idea as to when is the right time to move from like a CD to a money market account to just a regular bank account. I will tell the story of how Lancaster County used CashFest. They kind of dragged their feet for a long, long time. But in the last 5 years of using CashFest, they've realized about $25 million over what their original investment methods would have yielded for them. And as a resident of Lancaster County, they use that to buy down the levy rate, and I think that's awesome. And again, I know that Lancaster is slightly larger than Gage, but that's real money. And I think that's something that's worth mentioning, because they only take a fee if they're actually helping you save or generate some extra investment income. And so, you know, certainly a very valuable tool, and they've had some really good effects in Lancaster, Douglas, and a few other counties across the state. I mentioned Zelle HR Solutions. They're a human resources company that we've contracted with for a number of different things to provide as partners to counties. They will do a number of things on the employment context for you. They can do something as simple as running a job search. They can write an employee manual for the county. They can be your HR department. I don't want to step on anyone's toes if you already have an HR department. But they'll do just about everything in between. And so NACO had first contracted with Zelle when they were doing a search for a person to succeed Larry Dix and hire a deputy director, and they came up with me, so I think those guys are awesome. So I can't recommend them highly enough. And then the last one I want to mention as far as our partnerships are concerned is NPAIT. That's the Nebraska Public Agency Investment Trust. They actually do investment. They get a pretty good yields for counties across the state. That trust is essentially a pooled investment trust that generates a lot of income for counties across Nebraska. I do have to talk about legislation, even though I said I'm not a lobbyist. It is a large part of the job. And before I talk about any specific bills, I do want to kind of preach the whole notion of engagement with your state senator. And so Senator Dorn obviously was a former county supervisor here. He was a great advocate for counties inside the legislature. And you guys did a great job of interacting with him. I know, Eric, that you had talked to him a few times. Emily, you had as well. And he's mentioned that to me. And I can tell you that when I pull out any senator in the legislative floor and they come talk to me and they start off the conversation by saying, I've already talked to my county board member. I've already talked to the assessor. I've already talked to the sheriff. That conversation is going to go really, really well. And so engagement, I cannot overstate how important engagement with our state senators are, but also, you know, engagement means a lot more than that. I know that you guys have a good relationship with the city of Beatrice. That's great. That is something that is you know, increasingly more important, because when it comes to property taxes, which is always the big issue in Lincoln, they're always putting a target on the backs of counties and cities. The schools are a little bit too big, so we're the low-hanging fruit. And so we work with the cities all the time. We work with the schools because they are the biggest taker of the property tax. And having that engagement is important. So if you've got something that could affect the schools or could affect the cities or the NRDs or anything like that, that kind of engagement within the community is going to be very, very important. And I can tell you that this also includes your local Chamber of Commerce and your local chapter of Farm Bureau. Having them attending board meetings so they understand what's going on with you guys and you understand where they're coming from, that's going to be very, very important for the fights that we have coming ahead. So I will stop preaching about engagement, but that is a really, really big deal for us. And I will get to some of the bills that we were looking at and tracking this last session. And every year we track probably about one-third of all the bills that are produced by the legislature, just because of that's the nature of county government. We're in this game for the long haul. And so we track a lot of bills. I'm not going to go through all of them. I will go through the ones that we highlighted, though. So the first one I want to mention is LB 596. I had the pleasure of being here when Eric opened the board meeting, and he said the copy of the Open Meetings Act is over on the wall. One of the small things from LB 596 is that you no longer have to post the Open Meetings Act on the wall. You just have to have a copy available. So many, many years ago, the Attorney General had an opinion that by posting the Open Meetings Act, And that meant that you had to have it hung on the wall. It had to be current. It had to be all these different things. I will ask you this. I've only had one taker on this so far. In all the years that you've been county supervisors, how many times has a member of the public gotten up, walked over to the Open Meetings Act poster, and read through it and said, I think you guys are doing it wrong? Fortunately, you've got Amanda here to tell you when you are, but I don't believe that, citizens really ever go look at that thing that's posted on the wall. So having a copy available, I think, is appropriate and adequate for our purposes. But LB 596 did a few other things as well. It requires public bodies to designate the method of giving notice and your meeting schedule. You have to do that four times a year. You have to contact the press, whatever the newspaper of general circulation is, and say, here's where our regular meeting schedule is going to be. Four times a year you have to do that. The press was asking for a rate increase, which they got a couple of years ago. We agree to a certain extent that there needs to be a rate increase for the press that kind of mirrors what the cost of living, how much that goes up. And so we're talking about that for next year. So they withdrew that request for a rate increase this year. We are going to talk about it for next year, though. And then there are a few other things that that clarify notice for publication of digital and e-editions, which we're kind of involved in, and we're happy about that. But LB 596 also did a few other things. And there are other bills that are kind of added in. When you know that a bill is going to go, then everyone says, well, let's jump on in and see if we can ride the boat to the finish line. And so one of the things that LB 596 had inside of it was LB 896, which is increased marriage license fees from $25 to $50. If you've been watching the legislature for a while, you know that asking them to increase the fees for county government is like pulling teeth. And one of the arguments that we've had for a long, long time has been, if there's a cost of government and you're having it covered by a fee, and that fee doesn't cover what the cost of government is, it's going to be subsidized by the property taxpayer. And when you mention that to a legislator, they say, oh, no, we hate the idea of increasing property taxes. And so that really has been the key as far as getting fee increases and put in. And, by the way, the last time we had a fee increase was immediately after Ernie Chambers left the legislature. We increased it from $10 to $25 because one of the things about fees is that it is somewhat regressive in nature, in that if you're poorer, $10 or $25 or $50, that flat fee is going to be a greater portion of your income than a tax would. So, but anyway, again, we want to cover the cost of government, and that's what the argument we've been using. It also had LB 919 included in it, and what that does is it designates a different alternative durable medium that you can use for the preservation of records. Right now, when you preserve records, and there's a lot of records you have to preserve pretty much forever, you have to put it into microfilm. And I don't know about you, I'm 55 years old, and I first learned about microfilming when I was 5, and that was ancient then. It hasn't gotten any less ancient since then. And MIPS, for what it's worth, we have a microfilming division, and we're not making money off of it, trust me. It is only a cost recovery system, and I can tell you the costs for microfilming have skyrocketed in the last several years. The last 5 years, it's like an 800% increase for film, for chemicals, and for equipment. And it's just becoming, an archaic technology that's more and more difficult for us to preserve and to produce those sorts of things. And so we said, look, we're in the 21st century. Everyone's got one of these. People are accustomed to ones and zeros kind of being the way that they get information. And so why don't we just preserve things digitally? And so the alternative durable medium that we're talking about, it's going to be like a PDFA. We're going to work with the Secretary of State and the courts to make sure that we're all, singing from the same hymnal. And then another thing that was added into LB 596 was LB 923. This is a lot of stuff for the clerk. You're allowed to combine warrants into one fund. Am I taking up too much time? I can speed things up.
I just asked the clerk. I asked, what is PDFA?
Oh, it's like a PDF, like an Adobe PDF, and then the A is like accessible or something.
I didn't know if this was some type of disk or something. So it's just digital technology.
Digital technology. Yeah. And again, here's the funny thing in our microfilming division. When we scan things and put it on microfilm, the first thing we do is we take a digital picture of it, and then we put it on microfilm. And so I'm like, well, this is going to be easy. I mean, we'll just do the digital thing and we'll forget about the microfilm. So we're super excited about that. LB 834 was a bill from Senator Kalf in Douglas County. This had a lot of kind of modernization, nibbling around the edges sort of things with taxes. The first and foremost, though, is that we are not going to be charging a mobile home fee permit. And when someone applies for a mobile home park permit, they don't have to give the $10, I think, is the permit fee. And the reason for that is because treasurers statewide said, we spend more time and money actually chasing down those permit fees than we're getting back in return. So just get rid of it. Oh, by the way, they're already filing a similar form with the Department of Revenue and Department of Health and Human Services, and so we'll just have them give us a copy and we're good. So that's that legislation was in there, and when we approached Senator Kauf about this, she said, well, that's great, but, yeah, that's, in her words, not mine, it's not really sexy. Can you give me, add, like, seven more things? And I said, yeah, no problem. We've got a whole bunch of things laying around. And so we put a whole bunch of things about population harmonization and a whole bunch of other stuff related to taxes that we're able to get in LB 834. LB 838 for Senator Jacobson, that will allow county treasurers to round up or down to the nearest nickel when they're taking payments. As you, many of you probably know, the U.S. Mint decided that we're not going to produce pennies anymore. And statewide, I can tell you, the treasurers will tell you there is a penny shortage that has already started happening. And so rounding up or down to the nearest nickel is going to help them out with that. LB 803 has to do with the pink postcards. I'm sure you guys are super excited about the pink postcard hearings this year, right? Okay, no applause. There you go. What's going to happen next year on the pink postcard is we're going to change it a little bit as far as the timing. That hearing is going to be in July. Everyone is going to attend, so there's not going to be any gaming of the system where, you know, if you're below the allowable growth percentage, you don't have to go to the hearing or whatever. And what the way we're going to do this, the vehicle is going to be the change of valuation notice that the assessor sends out. And so that change of valuation notice right now, it says here's your prior year value, here's your current year value. What's going to happen is next year it'll have two columns, one for prior year, one for current year. The first line will be for your value, and the second, third, and fourth line will be here's how much tax the city and the county and the school district levied against you based on that value in the prior year, and if the levy rate remains unchanged, here's how much tax your new value will yield. And then we're going to make it very, very clear that if you think there's a problem with the valuation, you need to file a protest with the clerk, and the county board will hear it. And if you don't have sufficient information for the county board to make a determination, they're going to dismiss it. If you have a problem with how the amount of valuation change is going to affect the amount of taxes that you pay, you have to go to the budget hearing. There's going to be a pink postcard that's going to be produced by the state, not us. It'll come out in early July or so, and it'll tell you when this joint public hearing will be for every county and every class one and city of the primary and all that, whatever, the big cities, not the villages, and school districts. We're going to have a joint public hearing, and it's going to be in July, and it's going to be purely informational. And actually, I'm going to crib from Emily's thing that she did on the internet. We're going to put together a presentation of how you go from a budget, or pardon me, from a valuation base to a budget, to a property tax request, to a individual property tax bill. That'll be for your use if you want to use it. And then what we expect will happen is that the one or two people that are nominated to speak for each governing subdivision, they'll get up, they'll say, hey, look, here's what we're looking at. We're looking at a 15% increase in our health insurance premiums, looking at a 10% increase in the cost of gravel, and a 15% increase in the cost of hot mix asphalt. That's what's a preview of what you can expect at the budget hearing. Come and bring your friends and tell us what you want us to do less of. So, Emily, you have a...
With that postcard, when they're talking about sending that out and your change in valuation, and all you're doing is saying that if the levies were set the same,
yep,
that is 100% inaccurate. And because for the longest time, and we still do this, valuations don't set your taxes.
I agree.
The levies do.
You've been talking to Derek.
So when you do that, when you send out what your taxes will be on your new valuation, but you use the old levies, it doesn't work.
Yeah, and you're right in that it's not accurate in the sense that you haven't set your budget, right? You haven't determined what your property tax request will be. However, when you're trying to tell the taxpayer, here's the effect that your valuation could have on your taxes, we can't project what it could be. The only thing we have is the prior year levy. And so what we're trying to do is we're trying to say...
I think it's, almost misinforming the public even more then they're saying, oh, almost validates them saying, my taxes are going to go up by this percent because my valuations did it. It's validating that statement when...
Yeah. You're not wrong. What we're really trying to do, though, is we're trying to sever the connection. I mean, you're never going to sever the connection between value and tax. I mean, the valuation is a function and not the driver of the property tax. I mean, and you guys know that as intuitively as anybody else does. So you can't sever that completely, and people have already made that I mean, we've been saying, hey, your valuation is not your tax bill. We've been doing that for 70-some-odd years in the state, and that ship sailed a long, long time ago. People are, the citizenry is always going to make that connection. What we can do, though, is we can try to drive them to the budget hearing, because the most impactful, the greatest impact that a citizen can have on what their tax bill is going to be is arguing for a lower or reduced budget. Because, as you know, if the budget goes up, if the property tax request goes up, and this is the math I use all the time, if valuations go up 10% across the county, and the property tax request remains the same, your property tax bill remains the same. If valuations stay the same, but the property tax request goes up 10%, guess what? Your tax bill is going up 10%. And so you're right. The valuation is a function, but it's not the driver. But we got to get people to where the property tax request is made. And we've tried every other thing so far, and that's kind of the impetus. It's a valid point. I won't dispute that.
I think it just and I get what you're saying too, to get people there, but I think it just drives that misconception when we put those numbers on a piece of paper for them, because we've been trying to. Well, last night we had it again, where their values went up X percent. I'm like, but your actual tax bill won't necessarily reflect that. It depends on the levy.
Yep.
And we have those bad actors out there. I mean, we just saw the mayor of Lincoln. We kept the tax rate the same.
Yeah, well, that really infuriated me, because I live in the Lincoln city limits.
I'm sorry. Yeah. But that's when that happens, yes, that's accurate. But not all taxing authorities do that.
Yeah,
so.
And I thought it was interesting, and not to criticize the Journal Star, because they're a great paper, and we have a member of the press here, and I don't want to criticize his brethren. But I thought it was curious that the headline said, Lincoln mayor says levy rate will remain unchanged. And it's like, okay, but they're going to get $33 million more in taxes, and that's kind of, I'm not paying a rate. I'm paying a dollar bill, right? And so I'm with you. I get that. But again, we've tried everything else to get people to go to the budget hearings, and people do not attend budget hearings. And that is by far the place where the impact on the property tax payment is going to be felt the most. I mean, no two ways about it.
I agree with Emily's concern. The way I would say it is I think that there's not a... What you're trying to do is inform, but you're not giving enough information.
It's a really basic... Here's what it is, and it's not enough information. So there's going to be people that are going to draw conclusions one way or the other. Let's see how it goes.
Yeah.
Do it for a year and let's see how it goes. But I can see wrong conclusions being drawn.
And Gary, I appreciate that, because what the law says is here's a basic minimum of the information you have to provide.
Yeah.
We have a little bit more control over what actually gets on there, and so I've been working on some forms design as far as highlighting here's the last year's levy rate. This is probably going to change by law. It has to go down so that they're bringing up, raising the same amount of money as they had last year before they can increase it. I've got to figure out how to get that information on there without, just being way too much information.
Yep.
So, no, your instinct is absolutely right. The more information we can put in front of them in an efficient manner, I think, is probably the best thing we can do. So that's what we're working on trying to do.
Once they read it, they're going to be pissed, and they won't read much farther.
On our budget forums, if you guys ever read them, I know they're really interesting, and everyone loves them. But Nick still has that on there every year. This is what it would be if it was the same rate. It's like, well, that's pointless. Why is it even there?
Yeah.
But every year we have to put it on there, and it's recorded in our request.
Yeah. No, I think your budget statements are scintillating reading. Every year when it comes out, I'm like, we're going to read Gage County and see what's going on down there. I don't do that.
Good thing you didn't swear me in. And it's kind of under the scope of it all, is we are the voice that they come to complain to.
Yeah.
But 18% of what they pay in their taxes goes to Gage County. I'd love to see a percentage line on there where your school is 70%, your NRV is this much, so people could actually see the percentage that they should be.
That would be fantastic. Can you do that where it just shows the percentage and where it goes? I mean, you already have the dollar amount, you said.
Yeah.
Could you put that percentage on there? A lot of people have no concept that the money that they're paying is not going to the county. It comes in and it's distributed out.
Well, that change evaluation notice, it's going to have three different lines. It's just city schools and county. And it's going to say, based on your evaluation, here's what was levied against you last year by the city, school, and county. And here's what, if they don't change their rate, here's what that would be. And that number is going to be there. It's going to say X number of dollars is going to the schools, and X number of dollars is going to the city of Beatrice, and X number of dollars is going to Gage County. And so they'll have, I mean, it's just those three. They're not going to include the NRDs or the ESUs, but I mean, those are, you know,
the college, the Ag Society, and yeah. Historical, and all the little ones, but they still add up.
They do. They absolutely do add up. And for what it's worth, we've produced a number of things. We've got templates that are out there that we've shared with counties where, you know, you can, like, take a dollar bill and say, here's how much goes to the schools, and here's, you know, a quarter goes to the county, or 20 cents or whatever. I mean, there are templates that are out there to kind of illustrate what that does. If you guys have ever been up to Sarpy County, they have these huge posters outside the county board's chambers that do just that. It illustrates exactly where all the property tax dollars go. So
it's a nice investment there in Keith. I went by that building a couple times. Very, very nice building. Hopefully it's working out well for our Western brethren there.
They're pretty happy about it. They're very proud about the fact that, and not just NACO, but someone from the eastern part of the state decided to invest money out west. I mean, because that doesn't happen a lot. I do want to go through just a couple more bills. The one I did want to mention is LB663, Emily's favorite. This is the shot clock for zoning. And what this does is it has, there's a couple different things that go on. One, you guys have a shot clock of 90 days when you receive a conditional use permit application to render a decision. Otherwise, it's deemed, and if you haven't rendered a decision at the end of the 90 days, it's deemed approved. And the Planning and Zoning Commission has the same 90-day shot clock. One of the things that we think is vitally important, though, about that, and we had to have in there before we could negotiate an agreement with Farm Bureau and Senator Storer, was there's what's called a standard of review. And it's something that you guys have never had before on any of the decisions that you've made. Typically, you guys make a decision, someone appeals to district court, and they have a trial de novo. The court can take in new evidence. They don't have to even worry about what you guys decided, and they're going to do the whole thing from scratch. What this does is it creates the standard of review that if anyone appeals a decision that you guys make, the appellant has the burden of proving by clear and convincing evidence, which is a pretty decent standard of proof, that the county board was arbitrary, capricious, illegal, or violated its own zoning regs. And that alone, I mean, oh, by the way, there's a lot of folks that have said, we're going to put moratoriums on so we fix our zoning regs. But what that means, though, is that if you guys make a decision that's grounded in the regs, and it's not arbitrary and capricious, and you're not, you know, favoring, you know, picking winners and losers and all that, it's going to be very, very hard for someone to appeal your decision. And so on the back end of things, your decisions should be upheld way more than they ever have. And I think that relieves a lot of the pressure that you have during the time that you have to make that decision as far as making the right one. So I'll defer to your county attorney. She's certainly going to be way more familiar with the ins and outs of defending your decisions than I am. But we think that standard review is going to be a big, big deal for counties. So
this has passed.
This has passed, yeah.
When is it? What's the effective date?
July 19th.
Thank you.
Yeah. We did get one other fee increase that was added in, the distress warrant that the sheriff collects when he's going out and serving the distress warrant for personal property. It went from $2, which doesn't even cover the cost of turning on the car, to $20, which is a little bit more appropriate. Again, this is kind of covering the cost of government sorts of things. The documentary stamp tax is going to increase by $1 from $2.32 to $3.32, and it's going to go to the middle-income housing fund and some other stuff that I just, yeah. The less said, the better. A couple of bills that did not pass because I'm getting, I think we're all exhausted. I apologize. LB 468, which was an inheritance tax bill from Senator Clements, did not pass. We worked really, really hard with him to try and find revenue replacement. At the end, you probably heard that the state was a little bit broke. They had a $647 million deficit at the beginning of the session. They just didn't have the money to find revenue replacement. At the very end, Senator Clements said, can I give you guys an IOU? And I'm like, yeah, no, that ain't going to happen. And so the thing died. And he gave it a good effort. I mean, he worked with us in good faith, and I'm really sorry that we couldn't get anything done, but the state was just in a predicament where they couldn't guarantee us anything. And then LB 1219, I mentioned that earlier, it was going to limit the property tax request to 2% plus growth with no exceptions, which would have been a much harder cap than what we have now with SLICE. We were firmly opposed to it. They didn't have a path forward. Senator Brad Von Gilner, the chair of the Revenue Committee, He stood up on the floor and gave a speech about how I'm not going to vote for this because this is right like running down the hall with scissors and you're going to screw over local political subdivisions. Probably so, and I'm not campaigning for him even though he's a re-election. Probably one of the best floor speeches that has been pro-county, pro-local that I've seen in the legislature in the time that I've been at NACO. So I thought that was kind of a big deal, and I know that that's who I want to work with going into the future. And that is all I've got for now. I mean, I've got like, 30 pages of notes about legislation. I could go into excruciating detail on every one of them. No one wants that, but I'm happy to take any questions you guys might have.
John, that marriage license, that goes into effect July 19th as well?
Yeah. Amanda?
There was a bill, and I think this one didn't pass, that would maybe provide exemptions or protection for assessors to go onto properties, right? At one point in time, yep. Can you discuss that a little bit? What happened?
Yeah, that was LB 1019. That was held, and so we wrote it to go to revenue. It was in the revenue statutes, and for whatever reason, it got referred to government, because why not? And so in the government committee, there was a senator from Sarpy County who was really, really mad at us because we didn't want to go to a Prop 13-style constitutional amendment and for property taxes. And so he was really, really mad about it. He's like, I'm just going to kill your bill. I'm not going to let it out of committee. And we're like, okay. Senator Dornan carried the bill for us, 1019. He tried to we got permission from the government committee chair to have that as an amendment. But Senator Dornan said, look, I don't want to screw up their bill, and so if there's going to be a filibuster, I'm going to pull the amendment. And I said, yeah, I get that. I understand. And so a bunch of people rang into the queue. Senator Dornan said, yeah, we're going to pull it. So it was dead for this year. As you know, the Attorney General's opinion is an opinion. Well advised to heed what Mike Hildreth has to say. It hasn't been litigated. We don't know what the Supreme Court would say. We do know that on the one hand, that the state statute says that the county assessor has the obligation to inspect and review every parcel of real property within the county, no less frequently than once every 6 years. And so on the one hand, they have to do the thing. And doing the thing really requires going onto the property. On the other hand, you're going to get arrested if you do the thing. And that doesn't make a heck of a lot of sense. And so, we've been telling people, if you have questions about whether or not your assessor can do this, you should ask your county attorney. So, not to put you on the hot seat, but if she wants to charge Patty for going on someone's property, I guess that's your call. Sorry to put it back on you like that.
Nope, I get it.
Yeah, but we're gonna try and bring it back next year. I think we've got a path forward. We're going to try and put it in terms of if a public servant in the performance of their official duties has to go on land. This would cover utility workers. This would cover cops. Frankly, I mean, because if you're going to serve a warrant. You don't want to have to arrest the sheriff's office for serving a warrant because they're trespassing on someone's land. It doesn't make any sense. And so we're going to try and do that, and then hopefully that'll take care of the problems. We'll see.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Lawyers.
No, we like to complicate things.
They're the worst.
We try to fix it and sometimes make it worse.
I am also a lawyer, by the way. No offense taken. But my observation on lawyers has been they're kind of like a flock of birds. They swoop in, they mess all over the thing, and then they swoop out.
So technically, law enforcement can't go on private property right now.
Oh, teasing.
Well, I'm not going there because the Attorney General has not said that.
Yeah.
But
so I was just asking the question.
Yep.
That's
sales tax.
Yeah.
It came up again last night. We were talking about Senator Klaus is doing an interim study, and we were talking about ways to make that work, especially if it was like a targeted purpose sales tax.
Yeah, the thing about the sales tax debate in the legislature is, with anything with tax policy, who do you want to pay for the thing, and how do you want them to pay, right? I mean, we could have a consumption tax, a general consumption tax, kind of like EPIC, which is everyone's heard of. But when you do that, you say, okay, well, who's going to end up paying the tax? Because the tax rate would have to be so much, who's going to pay the bulk of it? And what you find is that it creates a shift where, people that own property that have capital-intensive projects, they're going to pay a lot less under a general consumption tax, and it's going to shift to everybody else, right? And people generally don't like that. So with the sales tax, you have to, those are the questions you're going to ask. How regressive or progressive is that tax? who's it going to hit, you know, what sectors you're trying to get to. One of the things we're going to talk about is having a localized tax, you know, where the county board can say we're going to designate certain retail corridors as being a place where we would overlay the tax. We're going to see how that whole thing goes and what legislation Senator Klaus decides to bring as a result. Good question. I'm going to hand out my business card, by the way. You know, like I said, NACO is owned by you guys. We consider ourselves your employees. I am technically an employee of all 1,500 county officials across the state. If you want to get a hold of me, if you have a question as to what's going on, feel free to give me a call. My cell phone number's on there. I have taken phone calls at 10 o'clock on a Saturday night, and it is cool because my wife is taking phone calls at 11 o'clock on a Saturday night. We've got the whole thing covered. So call at any time, and yeah, just remember, this association doesn't exist without you guys. So, I really, really appreciate the time.
Donald, thank you for some of the conferences you do put on. I know when they started that county chair workshop, I thought, I don't know what we'll get out of that, and That was actually really beneficial, just going around and talking to some of the other county chairs, going over some of the same things that everyone deals with, along with the other stuff, too. And that falls right through your other conferences, though. But those do work out well. Thank you.
Yep. No, we encourage all of you to attend as you're able. So appreciate it. Thank you.
Thanks, John.
Yep, thanks.
Thank you. Since you guys have patiently waited, we'll move on to Region 5 services and systems. Do you have a... Go ahead, sir. I was going to say, I don't know which one of you wants to go up first.
All right, if I go first?
Absolutely.
All right. May I approach with some handouts?
Absolutely.
Thanks, sir.
You got it. Okay. I'll just take the dispatcher from the
left. Very good.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Well, good morning. My name is Patrick Kreifels. I'm the regional administrator for Region 5 Systems. We're the Behavioral Health Authority in Southeast Nebraska. And first of all, I want to thank Commissioner Haxby for sitting on our governance board. We can count on you. Come to meetings. Appreciate you very much. And congratulations on your nomination and your appointment to the NACO President Board. Region 5 Systems, just as a reminder, we were born out of statute in 1974, and that statute is 71808, and our mission is to support the wellness and the recovery of people in Southeast Nebraska through the ongoing development and coordination of behavioral health system of care. We really envision that people experiencing affected by or at risk of mental health or substance use conditions or challenges receive care and enhance their personal well-being. In your packet, I'm going to start with this document right here. This is a picture of the service area, and there's just under 483,000 people walking around the 16 counties, and that's 9,308 square miles. And you can see the different population, the percentage of population for Gage County as compared to the other counties, as well as the poverty levels. The behavioral health authorities across Nebraska, we are that public safety net. So individuals that are not on Medicaid, they have financial eligibility, and they can receive services. So that's how we approach it there. Moving forward, the next handout right here, this is articulate to you a little bit about our governance structure. So there's a county commissioner that sits on our governance board, and Commissioner Haxby is the representative for your county, but all the other commissioners supervise me. So I am supervised by this governance board. And you can see we have a behavioral health advisory committee, which is part of statute. We're required to have that. So that's that local input from the county commissioners, the local input from folks that sit on the behavioral health advisory board to help shape the system and respond to the needs. And then the representatives of senators, we meet closely with senators, and I'll be meeting with all the senators before we go into the long session here this fall. The next handout is a long legal sheet right here. You can find across the top the counties that are in our service area, and you can see Gage County there. And the first column is the service full name. So this is the service array of behavioral health, so substance use and mental health services that we offer within our continuum of care, if you will. So if you flip to the back, you can see there's about 548 of your constituents that receives care through these array of services. And housing, we have additional housing. We have HUD housing contracts, about $2 million, that we have 64 units throughout our service area for individuals that have permanent supported housing needs that also have disabilities. The next document in here is the county match. So as you can see, I've been in this role as a regional administrator for approximately going on 4 years, 3.5 years. And during that tenure, I've reduced the county match by 28% overall. And we've made quite a few changes budgetarily. We've changed our office and decreased our office rent. We've reorganized a few times to create some efficiencies with employees. But you can see the counties on the left that contribute the population of 2020. That's the census that we use. Fiscal year 26, that's the current year that we're in. That's about to close here on June 30th. And that was your total match. And fiscal year, or column B is fiscal year 27, so that's next fiscal year, and that is the county match that we're requesting. You can see that stayed flat, no increase. Your statutory, column C, is the statutory required amount that each county is required to match the state general funds. And then the column D is the additional request, and I did receive your certification, and thank you for the additional appropriation request from Gage County. On that.
Patrick, just wondering, did all the counties give the additional county match?
We have not had a final response from all of them. There are three that are outstanding. There's one, Nemaha County did not match, and then York and Seward are waiting as they work through the budget planning process, but all the others have. Lancaster County, they are intending to, but we just haven't received their certification match.
Pretty much all of them.
All of them except one. But the other two, I believe they did last year, and I think they just want to get through the budgeting process. The timing of our budget, so our final board meeting was just June, just on Monday, actually. And so before our fiscal year starts, July 1st, we're required to have an approved budget. That's our accreditation. It's just good business practices. But I think you all have until
September.
So it doesn't always align. So there's that little...
But our budget starts July 1. Not confusing. Real good math.
Yeah. It's a little confusing. But I think that's part of the issue with it. Any other questions, Chairman, on that? Moving forward, the other services I do want to just point out in that service array, those are the ones that we contract with through a network provider. So there's about 13 of them, and sometimes we do letter of agreements, special agreements with different providers to address complex behavioral health needs of individuals. There are a couple services we maintain. That's the housing services and case management for youth who have serious emotional disturbances throughout the service area. But the other services that we coordinate is behavioral health disasters. So, for example, the wildfires that happened in the West, those regions 1 and 2 responded with behavioral health services to their constituents in those counties. So that is something that is available to Gage County if there is a disaster. We work closely with your management, emergency management director and systems here, and they know how to activate us. And we have a close working relationship with them. The other ones is the emergency system. So individuals that are placed on emergency protective custody by your law enforcement officers, we have crisis response and available to them, mobile crisis response, telehealth, telephone, to help them walk through if they're uncertain if an individual should be taken into emergency protective custody. We brought up the Voluntary Crisis Stabilization Center, which is a voluntary crisis stabilization center for individuals versus going to the EPC at Lancaster County Mental Health Crisis Center. We want to encourage voluntary kind of conformance in getting help versus the mandating of the EPC, but we do recognize that there has to be EPCs. There is training that we offer to law enforcement officers throughout that process as well. consumer coordination, housing coordination, network coordination. We audit providers to make sure that they're billing us appropriately. There are times where they have to pay us back because of unintentional billing. In the 21 years, you know, we hear a lot about fraud. I've never seen a provider intentionally, fraudulently misbill. It's always been complexities and not understanding some of the service definitions. But we do monitor for that and do annual audits with each of the providers. And then we are audited by the Division of Behavioral Health. We have youth coordination, prevention coordination, opioid settlement coordination of funds, and those are some of the other additional things that we do. The next document within your packet looks like this, and I just like to highlight a little bit. So this, I'm working in three different fiscal years. This one is about fiscal year FY25. We're in FY26, and I've been planning and trying to get an approved budget for FY27, which we have achieved that with the Division of Behavioral Health. But I like to demonstrate this, so these county match dollars are not always going to match here. But if you look at Gage County, your county match funds were about $54,000 respectively. And the amount of funds that were utilized by your county and the constituents in there was just around $844,000. So the return on investment for your county, you can see, is about $2.5 million. And how we calculate that is the it's a $1 spent and $3 in return. So for every dollar that your county spends on behavioral health services, you can expect a $3 return to your community, meaning people are going to recover. They're going to get better, and they're going to get back into the workforce. We're going to decrease the drain on law enforcement. We're going to decrease the county attorney's office drain, and that's that investment that I just like to remind folks that these dollars are going to good use. Any questions on that? The last document is our annual report. That's just for your information. If you want to see it more extensive, some of the activities and initiatives that we are doing, there are a few more things I want to talk about. We did receive a grant with the Policy Research Associates. We are having a sequential intercept mapping process on June 30th and July 1st, which is coming up here in a few weeks. It's at Innovation Campus. And what the focus of that two-day planning summit is going to be is addressing access to the Lincoln Regional Center for individuals that are placed on emergency protective custody or individuals that have competency evaluation or restoration needs and kind of the lag time. We're also going to be talking a little bit about the community-based programming and how to divert people who should go to the Lincoln Regional Center, who should go to the community-based hospitals. We have three senators coming. Senator Bozen, who used to be a county attorney at Lancaster County. She's very interested in public safety. Senator Spivey, Senator Roundtree is also coming. And that's to talk about what is the policy and legislative changes that need to occur within our system to make this flow and make our system work better. Chief Justice Jeffrey Funk will be in attendance. We have a couple judges that are going to be in attendance. Many county attorneys are coming, and hospitals, and other policymakers. So it'll be a couple days. The best possible outcome is if we can all come together, kind of agree upon what are the top three or five strategies that we want to employ and address to make the system better. So that's coming. We applied for an AOT, Assisted Outpatient Treatment, SAMHSA grant, which is about $750,000 annually over 5 years if we're awarded, and we'll find out in August if we're awarded that grant. And what that is doing is having some level of oversight and supporting the counties in regards to individuals that are placed on outpatient mental health board commitments. So supporting that mental health board and making sure that those individuals don't get lost. So did they go to treatment? Are they not responding to treatment? Does the board need to pull them back in on a warrant? And just having some oversight and coordination on that. We believe we can improve the system by moving that forward a little bit. And then the final grant that we applied for was a SAMHSA grant for Garrett Lee Smith to continue to address the suicide, death by suicide, and that is one that we're working with the Public Policy Center at the university on. And the legislatively, LB 7722, Senator Quick did submit a bill on behalf of the behavioral health regions across Nebraska, and that just modified. It was kind of a cleanup bill in regards to the documentary stamp tax funds. There's a certain percentage of those funds that go to housing for individuals. So we did build into that bill, and that passed through out of committee on select file, general file, and signed by the governor to allow some support to landlords if they're willing to take a risk on individuals that we serve, some risk mitigation if there's extensive damage. That was a success. The other one is LB 901, Senator Spivey. The gaming devices that are across the state, and I'm not that familiar with them, but there's a tax on those gaming devices from LB 901. 3.75% of the revenue from them will go to the Behavioral Health Cash Fund to support individuals with severe mental health and substance use conditions. And the last thing is the Square One project. That's for a place to go for youth and families instead of going to the emergency room. That our grand opening is going to be on July 13th. And so it's the final piece of that service is the mental health respite for youth. So if the youth can't return home, place for law enforcement officers to take youth to be evaluated, that there will be a grand opening on July 13th. The Mayor of Lincoln, Commissioner Yoakum will present on behalf of the region. She's our chair of our board. Commissioner Flowerday from Lancaster County on behalf of Lancaster County, and then Division of Behavioral Health will present that day. That's a collaboration of a lot of funding to make that happen to come together. I welcome any questions. I know I put a lot of information out there for you this morning, but is there any questions that I can answer for the board?
375% on the gaming devices. Is that additional funds, or will that just supplement, or will they interject that and then take funding away somewhere else?
It's a great question, Chairman. My hope is that it's supposed to be additional. And as we heard from John, we're looking at about a $640 million deficit. So I'm hopeful that it will be additional, but we'll see.
Just sometimes when they find something else, they just
decrease the state general.
It's
right.
Funny how things level back out again.
Yeah, yeah. Yes, great question. Any other questions?
Who might be a good contact to reach out to if we have some suggestions to put, you mentioned a $750,000 grant over 5 years to support mental health boards in following up with some of their commitments?
Yeah.
We've been throwing around ideas of case managers and things
like that
for years.
That is what this is supposed to do.
Right, perfect. So who could I share that with or have those discussions with?
Our emergency services director is Kristen Nelson. And our Stepping Up Initiative director, so she works with the jails, making sure screening and getting people out with mental health. You can reach out to them. Myself, you send me an email and I'll pass it along.
Okay.
And that grant, what we wrote in there, was to have a director and a coordinator oversight. And it's to occur with all 16 county mental health boards. We're starting with Lancaster because of the populace is 67, and one or two rural. That will be the start, but our intent is over those years to expand that oversight and coordination. So you can reach out to me.
Okay.
I get my card before I leave.
Okay.
Anything else for Patrick? Thank you, sir.
Thank you. I appreciate your time.
Get too happy.
You guys always travel together?
We do, as much as possible, yes. Makes it a little bit more efficient. Maximize time.
Thank you. How are you?
Good. Well, good morning. My name is Matt Kosick. I am the CEO of APACE, formerly Region 5 Services. Thank you for the opportunity to present our annual report. What I handed out to you, so first off, the glossy sheet is a collection of stories and celebrations from the people we support over the past year. I can come up here and talk about numbers and what we're doing, but really the stars of the show are the people that we support. So in it includes celebrations and achievements throughout most of our 16-county area. Overall, APACE is the largest provider of developmental disability services in the state. We support about 756 individuals with disabilities. We do that with about 760 employees and another 150 shared living providers. Here, so included the printout sheet, the loose sheet includes just some demographics of Gage County here. We support about 56 individuals in the community here. I should note that our relationship with the individuals we support is a lifelong relationship. We will essentially support the individuals as long as they will have us, and in most cases that's a lifelong relationship. You think of like a hospital scenario where somebody's sick, that relationship moves to get them out into the community back on their feet, whereas we walk alongside them all throughout their life. There are 25 individuals here that are competitively employed, so that is about 45%, or that is 45% of all we support. Overall, that percentage is closer to 27%. So it really just underscores the good work being done by our agency, which is overseen by Cami Erb, and she's been the same director that's overseen our organization for our agency here for the past couple of years. She was here a couple of years back when she first started. But this agency really performs well. The growth and the outcomes that we see here are above average. So great work is being done. But I also want to highlight the employers. The first thing I said when I started talking, I gave my name and then I gave my title. And when we work, we identify with our work. Individuals with disabilities don't tend to get the same opportunities that everyone else gets, so I really do appreciate the employers taking that extra step and taking a chance and hiring some of the individuals we support. As a part of the my annual report, we talk about a funding request, and there is no funding request. We did county funding years ago, and we went away from that. And I believe we are the only DD region in the state that does not do county funding. The reason for that is it was our funding mechanism has changed. So it's a Medicaid-funded system. It's all based on the individuals that we support. So if somebody that we support here in Beatrice wants to move across the state, they can certainly do that. They have choice in who their provider is, and that funding follows them around. Speaking of choice, without the funding request, your oversight means everything to us. So I want to echo what Patrick said about Commissioner Haxby. You've now served, I think it's 4 years that you've been on our board. You've been dedicated, committed that whole time, so I appreciate all that you do for us. But what the governance does for us is we are a political subdivision. We are a public entity. There are 180 other providers in Nebraska doing the same work that we're doing. And individuals can choose whomever they want as their provider. And so by being public, the trust, the instant transparency and the trust that provides to our families that we work with is immeasurable. So thank you for that. But the last thing I wanted to talk about, Patrick mentioned it too, there's a big narrative surrounding fraud right now in the Medicaid world. Since you oversee our organization and we are a Medicaid-funded organization, I wanted to assure you that that's something we take seriously. Our billing, we have several checks and balances throughout the process of billing and making sure that there is no fraud occurring. But then beyond that, we look further at waste and abuse and make sure that everything is just so. I like to say Medicaid is a huge program. There's a lot of people involved with Medicaid. When you have people and when you have money, you're going to have fraud. And so it's something that we take very seriously in ensuring that we can stop it before it happens. So with that, I'm open to any questions that you have. Well, thank you. Thanks again for the opportunity to talk.
Mr. Weil, would you like to do anything with that presentation?
Someone tells me I don't need to.
Oh.
replace the Region 5 systems and direct and a PACE presented annual reports on file.
What about NACO?
Huh? And NACO too. Why not?
We won't officially do it, though.
Sorry, I made a motion, all three of them.
Oh, that was a motion? Okay.
Yep.
The motion to place the NACO update, Region 5 systems, and the APACE presentations on file.
Second.
Second by, motion by Lyman, second by Adams. Created. Please vote. 7 in favor. They're officially on file. That's the end of our agenda. We do have 2 closed sessions for after this. It is currently 10:44. We'll take a brief recess as we go, a 5-minute recess as we go into, prior to going into closed session.
And you already went to the bathroom. We'll just move.
Spend it all on you. We'll reconvene at 10:49 on the clock. I would ask for a motion to go into closed session at 10:49.
So moved.
To protect the public interest, to talk personnel.
Second.
Motion by Dorn, second by Weidel. We're in closed session 10:49. Please vote. 7 in favor. We are in closed. I'd ask for a motion to go into open session at 11:38.
Come out of closed session.
11:38. Moved by Adams. Second by Claybaugh. Please vote.
Don't hold your breath.
6 in favor. Motion carries. We're back in open session. Ms. Mulligan, do you have some stuff for us yet? You can talk about things in open session.
I just know that I've been up in your house and everybody else's. And
up in my business. Up in my business.
And I'm going to defend what I know and what I've been taught by the state and what the state's been working. I have liaisons that come down. If there's a few out there that have gotten, you know, missed.
That's what you have to do, and I think that's part of the process.
I felt like before I left, I wanted everything straightened out. These guys just came in too, because I'm kind of a pilot county. So there's some growing pains in the fact that some of the land values went down that I can say, hey, I don't understand this. He's got some extra knowledge as far as coming from Lincoln and using those tools like pictometry and things like that. I would ask you if you think that's a good. He used my pictometry at 6 inches. To do some of the wine more.
I have a question now. We talked about a little bit when you mentioned pictometry. What keeps us from buying our own drone with a good camera and doing the same thing? Would it be cheaper in the long run if we did that?
I've actually explored that in my role, and that you make autonomous drones that you can program that can do those things. They come equipped with parachutes. They're about $80,000. We've looked into that. I think we stepped away from it, you know, at our company just because the technology that is being used right now by the aerial companies is better, but I don't think that'll be the case forever.
80 grand, though, we could pay for it in one flight, second flight, we'd probably start to get closer to money ahead if we did an interlocal with multiple counties.
Right.
We'd be money ahead year one. Yeah. Or an entrepreneur in the area would just buy a drone and start flying.
We shared that with Beatrice. So Beatrice paid for their parcels. I only paid $33,000 over a three-year period. And then they have the technology to measure the buildings from the sky and everything. But the 1 inch is where you need to see.
Is there any benefit to that, though? That's where I'm saying.
Derek, I'm going to have you.
Yes. Seeing it, they looked at everything this year. You can get a rough idea. We're not appraising, we're assessing. There's a big difference. I mean, can you get close enough where you can have an idea there? I mean, you're not going to get 1 inch, half inch, whatever. You're not getting the I'm on site look. Is it beneficial to just increase it that little bit and have a better view like that?
I don't know. You know, depend on the cost to go from 6 to 1 inch. I'm not familiar with that. You know, the higher resolution is always more helpful. It's just a matter of, you know, at what cost. But
and we don't know that. I mean, that changes by the day, too, I'm sure.
Yeah.
We haven't done it for 4 years.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm going to tell you that MIPS is the system that we went to from TerraScan. So that was a change from the computer system. Within that, and luckily when I was leaving, I decided that I wanted Derek reached out. They started the appraisal side of MIPS. It was always a treasure package and a clerk package. When they started the appraisal side of MIPS, he used to work for the department that was calling my values or looking at my values. He went over and took some appraisers. I mean, you've got listers that have had a lot of experience.
But this is what we kept asking.
The worst rating. We're trying to get this all straightened out.
But this is what we asked you for several years, and you said it was going to cost money to do a mass appraisal again, and we said do it. And
we did it.
You said this is where it was going to go. This was the direction that the board asked you to do. This is the direction the public wanted you to do.
This is what I've always wanted to do, too. But we had some issues over the last few years with paying 12 cents for, you know, you were worried about whether we could even keep people at one point in time with that Beatrice 6. And, you know.
We came up with a lot of scenarios, but we came out swinging hard.
I did do all the percentages across the board. And I'm not saying everything was perfect, but we did everything.
But we never assessed differently in any way for Beatrice 6 for any COVID, for anything else. It was just what the market said. We never changed our assessment.
It was what the market said, but when we didn't have him in a house.
4% on too low is still going to catch up. That's the bad part.
Yeah.
But now
we're there, I think. That's the key is we'll be.
Yeah.
Okay. See you, Amanda.
But you got to spend money to get there, too.
Yes. And time.
All right. Is there anything else for the good of the order? If not, we will adjourn at 11:44.